Instead of hanging out at bars or coffee houses when she was in her 20s, Faith Adeyele did something nobody else was doing. She fled the West for Thailand and became the first black ordained Buddhist nun. Years later, back in the States, she wrote about her experience in the memoir Meeting Faith, the Forest Journals of a Black Buddhist Nun. Adeyele says it was failure that brought her to Thailand.
I'd flunked out of Harvard, and you have to go away for at least a semester, and so I was casting about for what to do, and I found out about a study abroad program. I had been in Thailand my junior year in high school as an exchange student and had a really wonderful experience, and so I think instinctively I knew that Thailand would be a safe place. It was a place that relieved me from a lot of the pressures that I felt in the United States around gender, well, around race, in particular race and class. As a foreigner, you had a lot of freedom there. There was also this escape from the Western paradigm. So I leapt at the chance to study in Thailand.
So did you consider yourself a spiritual person when you went to Thailand?
I did not at all. My family upbringing had been very, very political. I always say that kind of politics and intellect were the twin religions of our household. My mother was the daughter of Finnish and Swedish immigrants and was the first person in her family to go to college, where she met my father, who was a Nigerian graduate student. And they were both very much caught up in the civil rights movement, the African independence movement, and they really had this zeal that was catching on in the 60s to remake society and create this international household. That didn't work out, but still my mother raised me with those ideals. So I was very surprised by my transformation in Thailand.
In a way, it sounds almost as though you were caught by surprise by this. Going in to be an observer, someone who could look at it and analyze it and walk away from it. Was there a moment when you realized that it was becoming more than that to you?
There were a couple of moments that stand out in my mind. One was very much at the beginning, right after the ordination ceremony. And we were having this large ceremony at the Royal Temple of the North. There had never been a ceremony for a woman held at that temple. And I thought, you know, that would be great. My advisor was organizing it so that we could kind of point the spotlight on the status of women under Buddhism. And so we had this ceremony, and I found myself getting strangely nervous during the ceremony, though I had just thought of it as a performance. And then I realized that people were treating me very differently, at least the Thai people, immediately after I had ordained. And I kind of felt that I was in this weird limbo, and I actually felt transformed. And I thought, well, this isn't normal, because of course, if I do change, it will happen through monastic living. It won't happen simply by taking these vows. So that was a moment where I began to feel kind of separated from my friends and my life. And then after that, they took me down to the temple where I would be residing and signed me in, and then everybody left. And then that's when the head nun pointed out that I had chosen not an ordinary temple to live in, as I thought, but in fact, a meditation retreat center where people focused intensively on meditation 19 hours a day, and that you had to take a vow of silence, and that it was all this extreme ascetic living that I didn't even think existed anymore.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was the moment where I thought, what am I doing? I cannot do this. And yet somehow something about she seemed to think I could do it, and I was very intrigued by her. I was intrigued by the idea that she seemed to think I could do it.
Well, tell me more about this place, the Wat, where you were ordained. Can you give me a picture of it? Describe it so that I can see it in my mind?
Well, it wasn't one of these normal tourist places that people go to that have, you know, beautiful buildings, the traditional tiered Siamese roof or that sort of thing. It was really kind of raw, newly built, kind of carved out of the forest. And you had to walk through these kind of beautiful greening rice paddies to get there. You know, we were hiking, trying to find our way in there, asking people because there were no signposts. And then all of a sudden, we just see like these kind of wild gardens, just this riot of foliage and flowers and songbirds and cages with the doors open. And, you know, these kind of graceful buildings on stilts, open air kind of pavilions. And it was between two really high rock walls, kind of purple rock walls that met each other, and a waterfall fell out from between. So then the stream came forward, splitting the temple into two. And on one side, it got all the sun. It was very, and interestingly enough, that's where the monks lived, and they're dressed in their saffron robes, and the sun is coming down on them, and they're doing all this stuff. They're very kind of vigorous by the side of the stream. And then the other side only got shade, and it was very green, and there were these giant ivory butterflies flittering about, and you could see caves up in the mountain face, and you could hear nuns chanting in the caves, and women dressed in white were kind of, they seemed like they were floating through the greenery. And the head nun is standing right there in the middle of the path, as if she knew that I was going to arrive at that moment, and said, ah, so you've come. And that is the moment when I decided to ordain, when I just saw this, and the little footbridge as if it were a Japanese wood carving. It was just, the landscape was so stunning that I was seduced.
Tell me about the day that you were ordained, will you? There was a lot to it. It needs a lot of explanation, I think.
Yeah. I guess because people are kind of hungry for that detail. And since that is the beginning of transformation, I focused a lot of that in the book. I kind of likened it to a whole wedding ceremony because I'm not someone who's that interested in kind of ritual and pomp and circumstance. But this was very necessary. And also because usually they don't pay attention to women's ordination. The ordination of a monk is a very elaborate affair in which the community gets involved and there's much pageantry. And usually when women ordain, nobody pays attention to it and it's almost seen as a sad event. So we wanted to kind of flip the script on that. My advisor, who had been a former monk and abbot himself, was very interested in that. So he was able to get me this ordination at the Royal Temple of Northern Thailand, the first one for a woman, as I said. The night before, we had had a head shaving ceremony. So I kind of liken that to the bachelorette party where I got together with my American friends and we had one last kind of party blowout and shaved my head and eyebrows. And, you know, I'm glad that my friends were there to give me a hard time when that happened.
Well, this is a standard. I mean, there is even a barber whose business it is to perform that ceremony.
Well, any barber can do it. I was friends with this particular barber and one of the things that people do is everybody gives you something for your ordination because that's considered that will make merit for their karma. So it's good for them if they help you on your spiritual journey. So people had been buying me things, and this barber, who's someone we used to party with, said, "My gift to you is I want to be the person who shaves your head." And so that's why he did it for me.
And in the ceremony itself, did you actually begin to feel the change?
After I took the vows, yeah. I took the vows. And it was interesting because the vows aren't the way we think of vows in the Catholic sense. They're not about sin. They say, literally, you're saying, I undertake the rule of training to not kill any living creature. Or so there's this kind of attempt, the ongoing process of trying to become a better person is built into the language of the vows. And I'd learned to say them in another language, not even Thai, but a traditional ancient spiritual text. And then they were translated into Thai for the Thai people there. And the way they were responding to the vows and the fact that I had chosen to take all of the vows, including the most difficult, which is not to use money, I started to think about that and like, oh, I've just been kind of saying these as syllables, but what do they actually mean? And do I know how to actually uphold these vows? How do you not kill any living creature? And I was going to find out how complicated that was later on. So that was the beginning of the transformation and seeing how seriously the Thais were taking it. And then the abbot started to lecture me on how so many people had faith in me and he was hoping that I could do this. And then I thought, and then I started to realize this is really a big thing, that this is not just an anthropological sort of excursion that I'm doing. And then once I came out of the temple and they took away my shoes and said that I was no longer human and I had to put on new shoes, that I'd entered into this new state, then I began to realize that things were different.
Yeah. What was life like there for you? You talk about 19 hours of meditation a day. In practical terms, what does that mean?
It's very hard. It meant that the bell rang at 3:30 in the morning and we were supposed to wake up and start immediately meditating, some form of meditating after you kind of clean up your little hut. Everybody lived in their individual meditation hut, you know, kind of get yourself ready. And then I think at 7:30 or so, we would all go outside and start sweeping the grounds, sweep the leaves and the dirt and kind of get your blood going and also kind of get us in tune with what nature's rhythms were for that day. So we'd all sweep silently together for an hour. Then we'd go inside, make sure that we were dressed formally and go to the meal. We'd have to line up by hierarchy kind of and then proceed to the front of the temple. And the whole meal process took about an hour and a half. And so we would go inside, we would pray to the Buddha, we would chant, everybody would serve themselves, we would eat mindfully, and then we would chant again and clean up and then go back to our respective huts. The rest of the day would be spent either sitting or walking in meditation, alternating with doing whatever chores you needed to do to keep your bathroom and your hut and your clothes clean by yourself. The others met for communal meditation or a lesson early in the morning in the caves. I didn't do that. Instead, the head nun would come and speak to me for an hour every evening, and I would tell her what was going on in my practice, and she would give me my new assignment, and then I would continue on with the walking and seated meditation until 11 o'clock at night.
How long were you there?
I was there for a Lenten period, which is based on the lunar calendar, but it's usually a couple of months. It's the rainy season, actually, and that's the time that Buddhists traditionally intensify their meditation practice. So people tend to go to the temples then and really kind of focus on spiritual gains and try not to be out moving about, which causes harm to animals during the rains.
Would you, talking to a person of that age now, someone in their 20s or 30s who is thinking about this, would you recommend it? Would you say this was essential for me? I think you would benefit as well?
I think making some sort of journey where you're taken outside of your normal comfort zone and pushed to really kind of confront what you think your limitations are, I think that's crucial. I don't think you have to go into a temple, and I don't think you have to interact with Buddhism at all, and I don't think it has to be a spiritual path, but I think you do have to find out what it is you're passionate about, and you do have to free yourself from only taking the safe route or letting your life be shaped by fear. I always encourage my students to travel and to be in places where they're the minority, anything that's just out of the norm, that's where you will find yourself.
Faith Adeyele is the author of Meeting Faith, the Forest Journals of a Black Buddhist Nun.